You're listening to Strictly Business Podcast with Lindsay Williams.
It's Wednesday, so it's time for Wayne on Wednesday with Wayne McCurry, who's a portfolio manager at FNB Wealth and Investment. Markets just seem to be, I mean, it must be lovely for you because it's so easy. Markets just seem to be going, I know you're laughing. Markets just seem to be going higher. And if you see results from Alphabet, for example.
Fantastic results.
Weren't they unbelievable? I mean, how does.
Yeah, and it's all, and it's advertising revenue. It's not, it's tremendous growth. And obviously, they had, YouTube as well growing very strongly.
Yes.
And clearly it's still this lockdown thing. I mean, no matter what you may think about possibly the growth rate slowing this next year, obviously this whole lockdown and everything has been a tremendous boost to their business.
Yes, it has been.
I mean, a tremendous boost.
But when I look at Google, which is used to be what it was called, now it's Alphabet, and Google is part of Alphabet. When I look at Google, I don't see any ads. I mean, I'll go there and I'll say Wayne McCurry, FNB Wealth and Investment, and I press the button, and all these things come up.
No, I don't see any
advertising.
You're missing the point.
Okay.
You're missing the point.
Tell me the point.
If you go to Google, I'm going to do it right this very second.
Yes.
And you type in something that's close to my heart. Just hang on one
Which
second.
Is what?
It's loading here. No, motor spares.
Oh, motor spares. Okay, I'll do the same thing.
Motor spares Johannesburg.
I'll do the spares. Same thing. Motor spares.
The guys pay to be in the front of the crew.
Oh, I see. So you don't actually see the advertisement.
No, and then also if you key in something like radiators.
Oh.
And it'll come up on the side, on the side of it will say all the ads for radiators, Ace Auto, eBay, Take a Lot, Auto Supply, they're paying for that.
I've got motorcityspares.co.za as the first South African one. I've got another one that says generator parts supplier, parts for portable generators in generatorguru.com.
Yeah, I think
But the motor
speakers, generators instead of radiators.
No, I put in Motor Spares Johannesburg. And it says but the first Motor Spares one is Motor Spares Home, and it's motorspares.co.za, which is a South African site. So obviously they pay to be up at the top of the list.
So you pay to be in the top of the list, then also quite often they literally, if you type in a generic thing, dishwashing soap, on the side, on the right-hand side, you'll get actual ads from suppliers for dishwashing soap, with the little picture.
But so the other thing that happens is now that I've gone into motorspares.com or .co.za, the South African site, I'm going to get these things flashing up on my screen wherever I go for that particular website or for that particular product that they're selling. That's what happens. Because, I mean, I might buy a pair of trousers or a T-shirt or something, and suddenly I'm being bombarded with clothing
and
ads.
Correct. It's exactly the same as we come back to one of our favorite subjects.
Yes, food.
When I started showing great interest in beef stroganoff, I looked it up once, and I was bombarded by 20 beef stroganoff recipes. And that's what they're paying for. They're paying to be selected by the, not artificial intelligence, what by the what's the formula they use in all of these search engines?
I forget its name. I'm trying to think of it now. Algorithm.
It starts with an algorithm.
Algorithm,
exactly. And so they pay to be selected preferentially in the algorithm. And if a person searches for this, put me up and, show alternatives. If they're looking for one thing, like my one spare supplier that I buy from in the UK for all of my spares.
Yes.
I can type in their name exactly in Google to look it up. So I'm not typing in Jaguar spares. I'm typing in their name.
Yes.
And they come third on the list. Two other guys have paid. That if someone types in classic Jaguar spares or Jaguar spares, two others appear on the name before them. But I'm not even typing in Jaguar spares. I'm typing in the name of the website I want to go to. So obviously their competitors are now paying Google to, if someone looks for this company, ABC, put my one in before that, because I do exactly the same as what they do. And so that's advertising.
Yes. And anyway, back to the whole point about this this discussion is that the Alphabet stroke Google's numbers were sensational.
Yes, they were. They were. But look, I mean, we've also spoken about this, and I keep saying it. We've spoken about this many times. Mm. Could last year have been better for the Googles of the world?
No, it couldn't have.
Could it have been better?
No, it couldn't have been.
So I wouldn't have. I wouldn't be surprised. I don't think it's going to happen. But I wouldn't be surprised if their revenue growth, whatever you want to do it this year in comparison to next year, is very low growth. Because they've had the big leg. They've got 3 years' worth of growth in one because of the lockdown.
Yes.
Now, they will still grow, but they're not going to grow at the same pace, obviously, as what they have in the last year. Because as we've said many times again, could it have been better?
No, we know it couldn't have been better, and but maybe 2021 will be even better because people are entrenched in their current habits.
But the growth rate will be significantly lower.
So what are you saying? Are you saying then that 2021 will signal the top of the or the short term top of the big tech stocks market, and therefore the US market? What are you saying?
Look. Okay, what I'm saying is, it could very well signal the top of the share price and maybe the top in the growth rate. But understand, whatever downside there is on the share price is limited. So the stock might just be a little bit overvalued at the moment and a little bit ahead of itself. But a little bit is, I mean, pick a number, 15%, 20%.
Yes.
Which in the bigger scheme of things, they're up 100% in the last year, whatever they're up by. It's nothing. Because, I mean, this is the future. This is the way we're going. You know, overseas, anywhere between 15 and 20% of all sales are online. So the rest of the world, South Africa, has got catching up to do. And it's never going to 100, by the way. It's never going to 100%. But it could easily be going to 40% of all sales being online. Quite easily, maybe even more.
Yes.
But whatever you thought they were going to grow by, a year and a half ago, you must accelerate that by a good 2 or 3 years. So if you thought online would get to 20% in 3 years' time, they're probably there already because of the lockdown, because certain things are now entrenched in the way we behave. So take Checkers 60. At home now, we're ordering Checkers 60 probably once every 10 days, so maybe 2-3 times a month, and we're just ordering the generic things that we need.
What do you mean? Toilet paper
paper, detergents, and and you know, the stuff that we got to have, the chips. We know exactly what chips we want, what soup we want, what chicken we want. You know what it is.
Right.
So you don't have to go and look at it in the store. You can just order. So now when we go shopping, we essentially going shopping for fresh stuff.
Right.
Because that you want to see. And we're also going shopping to look for new products.
And that's not going to change. You're not going to go out once a week and say, I'm going to buy the loo rolls, I'm going to buy the bleach, I'm going to buy the dishcloths and that sort of thing. You're not going to do that anymore. You're going to do that online, but you'll go for the fresh stuff twice or thrice a week. Is that what you're saying?
And the big difference is now when we walk out from a shop now, from a Checkers or a Woolworths or a Pick and Pay or a Spa, when we walk out now, we're walking out with two relatively small packets, whereas previously you walked out with a trolley piled to the hilt.
Yes.
That's being delivered now. We're not doing that. And also, previously you went shopping. You know, you'll say Saturday morning we're going shopping. Whereas now you go and do the small shop on the way somewhere. Oh, we've got to go visit Joe. We'll leave 10 minutes early and just quickly pop in because you know exactly the place you're going to go to and look for, and you know more or less what you're going to buy. You're not walking up and down the aisles.
So what you're saying is a very important observation, actually. It's a very important socioeconomic phenomenon that's gone on. You're not going to change the habits that have been entrenched over the last year. They may be slightly modified, but you're going to get the loo roll online, and it'll just arrive. But occasionally when you want to get some asparagus or an artichoke or whatever it is, or a piece of meat, you're going to get it. You're going to pop out, go and get it, and then come back. But it won't be the big basket.
No, it won't be the big shop. It just won't be. So over time, what's going to happen is that and this is over long time periods, grocery stores, general dealers that have got a big online presence are going to shrink their footprint, because at the moment, Checkers 60, they've got the pickers in the shop. In fact, they sometimes almost knock you off your feet. There's so many pickers in the shop getting the stock, because they're taking it directly from the shelves. In the not too distant future, they'll be taking it. It'll be accumulated in a distribution center. They won't have to pick it up off the shelves anymore. So they'll need less square meters, because there'll be less feet in the shops, and they'll have to keep less on the physical shelf, the physical shelves in the retail shop. So over time, they will need less square meters. But it's very interesting, this Checkers 60. It's a fantastic system, because each one is regional. So you are served from your local shop, because that's the only way they can get it to you in 60 minutes.
Yeah.
But it's very interesting. They've got a very sophisticated stock take system, because the manager or the store manager or the floor manager can walk around and say, hey, I've got a lot of Baker's salty cracks.
Yes.
I've overstocked you. So they go and alter the website slightly, that when you key in salty cracks, it puts Baker's there first and not ABC salty cracks. So they'll move that stock first, because you just want salty cracks. You just click the first one. You know, so they can actually maintain very, very cleverly their stock level. So if they say, oh, we've got an oversupply of this one, we'll pump it on the online, because people will just choose, as we spoke about earlier, most of the time the first one. You know, dishwashing liquid, toilet paper, you know, so they can do it. I mean, the other retailers must be very, very aware of what Checkers 60 is, because the website works well. It's far better than Woolworths. I think it's better than Pick and Pay as well. It works well. And in 60 minutes, there's bing bong at your door and it's there.
Well, let me just read you something now, which I find extraordinary. This is from London, and it started in London. If you live in the right part of the country, it says here on this article, you can now call on a whole raft of app-based systems that promise to bring you groceries within 10 to 15 minutes, Wayne.
Yeah.
Agile startups with names such as Wheezy, Gorillas, and Deja are promising instant deliveries with no substitutions. The person involved has tried all three, but likes Deja best because he finds its app is easier to navigate. So you can say, oh, goodness me, I can't be bothered to cook tonight. It's quarter to eight. I want something by 8 o'clock. You press it in, you press the buttons, you get the food, and it comes within 10 to 15 minutes, and it's guaranteed. How does that work? I mean, what a world we live in.
Yeah, it is astonishing. Look, I think to get your stuff in 10 minutes, you're going to pay. So it doesn't tell you there what the cost is of that delivery, because you have got to have a souped-up system there to get it so quickly to you. And you'll probably find that the selection is relatively limited.
Okay.
However, it is a start, and it will only improve. And that, I mean, just to stay on this exact same subject.
Yes.
I think this is why Naspers and many, many other people are hitting this food delivery business big. While they're investing, at the moment they're losing money hand over fist. Is that if there's one logistical operation that's geared to get to your house quickly from the source, that's food delivery.
Do you think that Naspers
it gets cold?
Do you think Naspers or Prosus lost out, or did accidentally did a good thing by not buying Just Eat for that extraordinary amount of money?
I don't know the answer to that. Obviously, it was an extraordinary amount of money, as you correctly said.
Mm.
But if this works, I mean, right now, you know, if you can channel 20 or 25% of total online purchases through the logistics of the food deliveries, you are going to make a fortune.
Yeah.
Because you must remember, I mean, you might not do it that often, but I do it at least once a week. I get
What's
takeaways
that? What do you do? I know I do once a week.
Yeah.
Takeaways. It's so easy. Yeah, it's lovely.
It's so easy.
Mm.
But when do you order the takeaway? I can promise you 80% is between 5 and 7 at night time.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah.
Maybe a little bit at lunchtime to the when, you know, if you do.
Maybe on a Saturday I do that, yeah.
Yeah, okay. Let's just say during the week, but 80% between 5 and 7 at night time.
Mm.
The rest of the day, that system sits idle there.
Eh? Yeah.
It does nothing. So if you can channel other goods through that system, because it's obviously geared for quick delivery. This is what Naspers sees. This is why they're going for it. This is why they've just sold Tencent shares and raised $14 billion. It's not just food delivery, but the overwhelming majority is food is for food delivery because that's what they see. And I think it could work. So maybe in 5 years' time, the price just eats much. They've looked like a bargain at the price.
The problem I have with it is the easy – there are no really difficult barriers to entry. I know, I mean, I spoke to somebody in Johannesburg and he said to me, look, I'm going to start a regional or suburban delivery service. So in other words, it's localized instead of just being a national service. So for example, you might live in Parkhurst in Johannesburg or Parktown North or something like that. And you go to all the restaurants there and they say, right, we can do this. So I think the barriers to entry are one of the things that I wouldn't.
A couple of guys,
yeah, go on.
A couple of chaps on a scooter with a little box on the back and off you go.
Precisely.
However, the physical barriers to entry are nothing. However, the real barriers to entry are absolutely phenomenal.
Go on.
Because the Just Eats, the Uber Eats, the Naspers, all the other guys, the Mr. Delivery.
Deliveroo.
They've got deep pockets.
Yeah.
Deep, deep pockets. And they will just go to the retailers, to the fast food outlets and say, we'll beat this guy's price.
Yeah. Okay.
And that's what they're doing. They're grabbing market share.
I can tell you one thing right now, Wayne.
Physical cost or nothing.
I can tell you one thing right now. It's going to become regionalized. It's going to become, I can service your particular area. It's not going
to be. It's got to be regionalized.
Yeah.
But it'll be regionalized under one big umbrella because you're one of the biggest assets, which in fact is a very big barrier to entry. Could have quite sophisticated software to coordinate all of this in.
Hmm.
You know, you can't have one guy on a bicycle, on a motorbike. So let's just say there's four people in your house and they want orders from three different places.
Okay.
You can't have one guy running to three places just getting the one order. You've got to have one guy running to one place with five orders and then delivering and another guy going to another place. So in theory, you could have, if you got four people in your house with three orders from three different places, you might have three scooters arriving. You know, so the software and the coordination and to put everything together and know where your drivers are and where your delivery people are, I mean, this will probably cost you an absolute fortune to write the software. So, in fact, that's your big barrier to entry. You've got to have very sophisticated software with GPS tracking because I order from Mr. D.
What's that?
Mr. Delivery,
Mr.
D. I order from Mr. D. My phone gives me a little ping pong when the guy's 100 meters away from my house because they're checking him on GPS.
Yeah.
And they know where my GPS is with my phone. And when he arrives at my house, before I can even hear him arriving, the little thing says, woohoo, your food's here.
Yes, yes. Yeah.
This is quite sophisticated, eh?
That's right. Very good. What was the last thing you ordered from Mr. D?
Thai red
Curry.
Duck curry.
Ooh.
And it's so delicious. They put lychees in it. Now, I would never have thought that lychees would be nice in any sort of curry. So when I first saw it in the curry, the first time I ordered it, which was a while back, I looked at this round thing. I thought, what on earth have they put in here? And then I tasted it, and it was a lychee,
mm-hmm.
and it was fantastic. So that's the last thing I ordered.
Okay, so well, I say lychee, but you say lychee, but who cares?
Lychee,
tomatoes, tomatoes,
it doesn't matter.
Exactly right. But anyway, it went well with the duck, did it?
Ooh, fantastic. But there's one little thing I've got to be very cautious on here.
Okay, go on.
I've had this a few times. The first one I ordered the hot, because I thought, I'm big and brave. I can take it. I can do it. Oh, my goodness. It was hot.
Your teeth melted.
Now I'm down to the medium now. Now I'm not as brave as what I was the first time
around. We'll talk about food later on. Let's talk about one other thing, though. A trading statement and voluntary trading update for the 6 months ended 31st of March from a company called Pepcor. And it says here,
yes.
Pepcor increased revenue from continuing operations
Fantastic.
By 8.1%. Really, really good numbers. People are trading down, aren't they? Because it's a value operator.
Numbers. You can maybe make a little bit of an argument that Spar's numbers were a bit disappointing.
Hmm.
But everyone else, the numbers are good.
Yeah, very good numbers.
But believe it or not, the numbers are good right across the board. And there's two or three, not just Pepco's results now.
Mm-hmm.
The whole lot of them coming up. There's two or three really interesting things that have happened.
Go on.
First of all, furniture. Through the roof.
Why?
You can read Pepco's there. Furniture turnover is up 18-20% because people are sitting at home on their tatty lounge suite and it's not comfortable anymore. And they're buying a new one because now they see it every day and they say, no, hell no, we've got to get a new one. Now, I bought 6 new dining room chairs because
when?
The old ones were I'll come to that now. Very, very recently. I bought 6 new dining room chairs
yes.
because the old ones were very nice, but they were nice to sit on for 45 minutes to an hour while you're having your lunch or your dinner. They're not nice to sit at when you're working from home all day. They were
yeah, but they're dining room chairs. I mean, you don't sit in your
exactly.
dining rooms
but
when you work.
But now you're working at home, so you're working in the dining room.
Okay.
I have got a study as well, but there's 2 of us at home. And sometimes you need to lay out your piles of papers and files because I've still got those things and you need desk space. So you go to the dining room table. So I'm
okay. Yeah. Okay.
We've had these ones for a long time now. We've had them for 8 years, 10 years.
Yes.
Let's buy new ones. So we go down to the shop and we choose, we have a look and we choose nice comfy ones with, you know, nice, actually very nice ones, very comfortable ones. And we pay for it, and they say delivery. You know, we think in 4 months you can't buy furniture. The furniture manufacturers stroke importers cannot keep up with demand.
How much did you pay for these things?
On furniture.
How much did you pay for these?
I don't know. 800 rand, 700, 800 rand a chair.
Per chair. Okay. Let me tell you something before you go on with the rest of your story. I have a back problem because I'm tall and I've had a very bad posture from the time I was in my teens because I'm 6'5". Okay. Now, I bought a chair online in the Netherlands for my new apartment, which retails. And let me tell you this now, 1,800 euros. It's an object. I mean, if you double that, that's 36,000 rand for
a
chair.
It's quite expensive.
Hello. I mean, it's extraordinary. But I got the seller down on one of these classified websites, probably owned by Naspers, for 265. But the point is that people are buying stuff nonstop online. I got from 1800, and it's brand new, this thing, down to 265. It's extraordinary what's going on.
Yeah. But look, you know, you talk about you being 6'5".
Mm-hmm.
I just want to qualify the statement before I reach the end of the story.
Please qualify.
My son bought a Pirniaf.
Oh, you mean the artist?
The painter.
Yes.
Yeah. Now, where I want to qualify it is a one of a thousand prints that was made from one of his lithographs. But he did physically sign the piece of paper.
Okay.
And it's no bigger than an envelope.
Right.
Okay, so my son didn't pay a fortune for it. So that's the first qualification. He's not bought a Pyrenees painting for 800,000 rand. It's significantly lower than that.
Right.
But nevertheless, I had to go to the auction house in Pretoria to go and pick this up.
Yeah.
And I had to go. I've never seen a place so packed. They've got stuff. I don't know how they work out where anything is. They've got stuff to the ceiling over five floors. But anyway, so I found the guy, and he went and gave me this little Pyrenees print. This is the tallest man I've ever met in my life. I reckon he's over 7 foot. The tallest chap I have ever met in my life.
That's nice.
Okay, anyway, so yeah. So my second point is you can't get furniture now, so that's the first thing of this lockdown. Second thing is that home and DIY has gone through the roof. Builder's Warehouse, yes. Cash Build. It has gone through the roof.
Because people are tarting up their places. Yeah, exactly. You're sitting home doing nothing.
And you're fixing it. And the other one is electronic sales. That was also reported in Pepco. People are sick of that printer that takes too long and sick of my 10-year-old computer that's too slow. And I want a keyless keyboard because I'm sick of all these cords lying all over the place. And I don't want to look at the small screen. So I've bought myself a proper display screen, you know, a big screen. And my old TV was junk. I want a smart TV. So electronic sales have gone through the roof.
I bought a television about 2 weeks ago, a second-hand television from a very nice chap from Afghanistan. Second-hand, 40-inch screen, €315, which is it's a huge television. I don't know, maybe 45, I don't know how. Anyway, it's a big thing. I mean, it actually blinds me when I watch a football match in the evening.
Yeah, look, I actually also bought a TV not recently, maybe a year ago, maybe a year and a half ago.
Mm.
And I looked very carefully at all of the TVs. And I actually bought a medium-sized one because these massive big-screen ones, your neck gets sore. If the screen's too big, your neck gets sore going when the person who walks
across
the screen.
They distort the images.
So I've actually bought a relatively small screen.
Okay.
And the clarity is just fantastic. But you know the one thing, talking about TV screens, talk about a 42-inch and a 36-inch.
Mm-hmm.
Those cheating there, man. You know what that measurement is?
No, I don't.
It's the diagonal. It's not the width. It's
from the corner to the corner.
The screen.
Okay.
You know, so it's not 42 inches wide. Oh. It's 35 inches wide because that's a diagonal. And I think they've been conning everyone here forever that's the diagonal measurement. It's not the width.
Okay, well, now you've made me think about all sorts of other things as well. Wayne, last week we spoke about, let's have a look at the market. The market is,
market's quite good. It's all financials.
Yeah, it's all financials.
And it's property.
Yeah.
Look at the property. Look at the property counters there. I mean, Growth Point, which is the biggest, I think, property company around. I mean, this thing's up 19% in 3 months.
Do you like them?
Look, there's big risk. There's big risk. Make no mistake. If the economy falters for whatever reason in the next 2 or 3 years and they've got to give out these rental concessions again and the economy's not growing and they get debtors and they get bad debts, then it's not good. But if things go as planned and the economy grows by 3%, 4% this year and 1%, 2% next year, hopefully higher, but as long as it grows from this point on, I mean, you're buying these shares at 13% yield.
Yeah.
Remember, 5 years ago, these things were at 6% yield.
Mm. Yeah.
It was crazy. Why would you buy property at 6% yield when your distributions are growing at 5%, when you can buy a bond that's significantly lower risk that was yielding 9%? I mean, were you just stupid? But people were loving it because at that stage, on virtually any basis you want to, if you exclude Naspers and maybe one or two other shares, this was the best performing sector on the JSE for the previous 15 years. And guys were buying these things at premiums to the far lower yield than the government bond yield. And they were buying them at significant premiums to their net asset value. And their net asset value, as we found out post all of the whole story, these net asset values by some players were manipulated.
So
now you can buy them at a 50% discount to their net asset value. I think you hold it, but there's risk and it's long term.
Okay, but do you hold them?
I think it's justifiable, yes.
You do? You hold them?
Yes. Not all of them, I've got a couple of them, yeah.
Okay, good. Wayne, let's talk about more important things now, and that's food. Last week I spoke to you about a lobster roll. Do you remember when I spoke to you about the lobster roll from Jason
delicious.
Bakery? Used to be in Bree Street in Cape Town, now moved to Greenpoint. So, you know, I had this bee in my bonnet about the lobster roll. So I went to my local fishmonger and I bought a live lobster. And he'd put the little, you know, because these things have got quite sharp claws. And he'd taped up the claws and it was live. I said, I wanted a live lobster. And the first thing I have to say to you, if you're squeamish, please turn off your phone
radio,
now.
Yeah.
I killed the lobster because it was alive and it's flapping around.
I couldn't do it.
Okay. The West Coast lobster has three horns on its head. And I've always told to put the knife, the sharp knife, you bash the knife down into the lobster's brain in the middle of the three horns. Now, these lobsters are North Sea lobsters, and so they weren't there. But I put the knife into the head of the lobster, and so much liquid came out of it. I mean, it's like brain liquid. Sure. It was disgusting. But
I couldn't do it. It's the same as I eat meat. You know, I've got no problems with that. But yeah. I don't want to eat something that looks at me.
No, it
so
wasn't looking
never
at me.
I'll have a whole fish. I'll have a piece of fish.
Yeah, it wasn't looking at me.
You know, I don't want something that looks at me.
No, it wasn't looking at me. It was looking forward. And I put the knife in there, and anyway, all the brain liquid came out. But it didn't die. It just kept on moving. Its legs were twitching and everything.
No, look, these things are, I think they're hugely resilient, eh?
I tell you what, this one was resilient to the point of over-resilience. It was, anyway, the point is, then I cooked it and I tried to recreate the lobster roll. And I have to tell you, Wayne, the lobster is the most overrated and overpriced crustacean that I've ever come across in my life. Guess how much it cost me for this one medium-sized lobster?
I don't know, but let's say 15 euro. I don't know.
25 euros. It's a good guess, but it's 25 euros, which is, let's call it 450 rand for one medium-sized lobster. And then you take off the legs and everything, and you boil them up for stock and stuff, but you just get the tail. And I put it in a soft roll. It just wasn't the same, but I had to recreate it after our chat last week.
No, you had to try, yeah.
It was terrible.
Look, I haven't eaten lobster and langoustines often for that very reason. I think prawns have got better taste.
You're absolutely right. Prawns are my favorite. King prawns, tiger prawns, it doesn't matter what prawn it is. You're completely right. They are so much better than the lobsters.
There's a big difference between prawns and those little things they serve you in the UK
shrimps.
That actually double up as shrimps.
Yeah, yeah.
Because to me, they fairly tasteless. But there's a restaurant that I go to often that we've spoken about a few times called Laurentino's.
Oh, yeah.
Just up the road from my house. And they do a prawn dish called Mozambique prawns. I think it is just Mozambique. But it's done with a lot of herbs and spices, and it's actually cooked in a beer sauce.
Oh, nice.
And it is delicious. It is properly delicious.
Okay. Have you ever been to that place on Louis Botha Avenue called
Radium Beer Hall?
The Radium Beer Hall, yeah. Yes,
I've been there often.
Yeah. Famous for their prawns.
Very, very recently.
Oh, gosh, they're good.
Very recently. I didn't have prawns there. I had their spatchcooked peri-peri chicken, which was delicious.
Yeah.
And I spoke to a couple of people who did have prawns, and they said they were also very, very nice. Mm. So in our office, with a group of about, call it eight of us,
yes,
sometimes more, sometimes less, that every once a month on the last Friday of the month, mm-hmm. we go off for a lunch, and the lunch starts at 2:30. So we're not starting the lunch at 12. We're starting in the afternoon quite late. Once a month, we go out.
Okay.
And we try and pick spaces that are a little bit off the beaten track.
Right,
sir. So we don't want to go to signature restaurants where it's all fancy. And so we've been to the Radium Beer Hall. We've been to the Troyville Hotel. We've been to a place called Sesco's. We've been to another place called the Purple Lounge, which was a Indian takeaway stroke restaurant. Where else have we gone? We've gone to two other places. I just can't recall the name right now. And where they were a little bit, we went to a place called Cafe Alfaco, where they're all a little bit off the beaten track. And we've had some fantastic meals.
Yeah, I prefer those small restaurants, don't you? Yeah.
Yes.
My favorite prawn place, of course. I mean, you're talking about prawns, and that was La Perenia in Rosettenville, Turfontaine, yeah.
We haven't been there yet, but we are certainly going to give it a go. But we swear, I mean, I've told you this before. The Troyville Hotel,
what's the name of the street? Just remind me, this street.
It's on the Jewel Street.
Jewel Street, that's it. Exactly right.
Yeah, it's okay. On Jewel Street.
Yes.
And they had their food was fantastic.
Yes.
But the best part of the meal was they had the freshest, they might have done it themselves, the freshest Portuguese rolls that you put a bit of butter on. It was delicious. We actually even ordered more rolls. We said, no, you've got to bring us another extra roll each because they were so nice. And the place was actually quite well attended. It wasn't, you know, a lot of the places we go to, you know, maybe it's the wrong time that we're going, but they're fairly empty until about 5 o'clock when people knock off and then come in for something to eat or a quick beer or whatever the case is. But actually Friday lunchtime, they're relatively empty.
Mm. Gosh, I feel nostalgic about Johannesburg suddenly. Wayne, thank you so much for your time this evening. That's Wayne McCurry, who's a portfolio manager and Epicurean from FMB Wealth and Investment. The views and opinions expressed in these podcasts are those of Lindsay Williams and various contributors and do not reflect the policy, position, or opinion of any other agency, organization, employer, or company associated with strictlybusinesspodcast.com. Assumptions made on the analyses are not reflective of the position of any other entity other than the speaker or the author. And since we are critically thinking human beings, these views are always subject to change, revision, and rethinking at any time. Please do not hold us to them in perpetuity.